Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Greetings, and you're listening to The Brian Lehr Show. My name is Mario Murillo, in for Brian Lehr. Did you know that over 170 billion emails are sent around the world on a daily basis, which can be calculated to about 2 million every second? Well, as it's Friday, that estimate might be a little too high, as some companies are opting out of emails on Fridays. Forget about casual Fridays. The new thing is no email Fridays. Joining me to talk about this is Sue Schellenberger, who writes the Work and Family column in the Wall Street Journal. Sue, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
So this is a tough one. The email is, as I just pointed out, everywhere. How do we get away from email, even for one day?
The corporate user is seeing 27% more email year by year. It's really becoming overwhelming. And I think it's interesting that bosses are the ones who are initiating some email bans, one-day email bans or weekend holidays on email, simply to cut the circuit, get people to talk to each other by phone or reach out in person. And they also want to raise productivity. And in some cases, they're truly worried about stress, that people are checking their emails 30 to 40 times an hour, according to one study in Scotland, and it's just too much.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into what its effect banning emails might have, how do you ban emails in the office?
You issue an edict, and then people will have trouble with it. You'll find people who violate it. Bosses have two ways of dealing with this. Some of them issue kind of a tongue-in-cheek fine of $1 per email. Others will simply call out the employee and say, hey, this is our new policy, cut it out. Employees can violate the spirit of the ban, though, and I found some, as I interviewed various people who've gone through this, I found some employees who kept writing those emails and putting them in their draft boxes and then letting them all go the next day at 12:01 a.m., which, of course, is not exactly what the boss had in mind.
Yeah, well, that's also, I mean, I guess you can go home, right? I mean, it's in the office. You can get home at 5:30 and then start sending them out. But yeah. What is the idea? What is the effect that this might have on office culture, for example? Is it positive? Or what's the main? Well, maybe talk about some of the positive effects that it might have.
A great question, because that's the ultimate goal that these supervisors have. They want to change the office culture, interestingly, back a little bit more like it used to be in the past. That is where, for example, human resource manager I spoke to at one company had gotten so used to sending emails to all the far-flung employees that she hadn't even met many of them. When the email ban came in at her company on Fridays, she had to get up from her desk, walk out to the warehouse, and see those people face-to-face. And she found she was developing some relationships that she wouldn't otherwise have had. She learned about their families. And I would suspect, although she didn't say this, that some of the tension and conflict around communication at the office goes down because you have a relationship to draw on. Other managers reported that they could see employees working better as teams in crises because they had developed the human relationship that makes that happen.
Right, and the face-to-face contact obviously is a lot different, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I want to ask the listeners, all of you, to call in if you have any comments on this. Could you walk away from your email? I mean, for me, you said that it was, 30 times an hour people check their emails on average? That you
30 to 40 times.
Yeah, and then I almost want to say I plead guilty, because sometimes I walk into my office and just for the hell of it, I click on just to see if anybody sent me an email, and then I start realizing I depend on it. So can you, all of you listening, can you forego your email for even one full office day on a Friday, either personally or professionally for a full day? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, again, 433-9692, and join our conversation with Sue Schellenberger. What about the negative impacts that this might have? I guess one thing that comes across is its impact on business in the short and long term.
In these cases, the boss is guarded against negative impacts by allowing contact with clients and customers and dealing with emergencies. They don't want to shut business down. But it could, I think, be negative for certain kinds of jobs where people maybe have, reports to send out, routine messages. There can be lost, though. I really think there isn't a lot of downside here. in the way that these companies are managing it. It does cause frustration, and the short-term effects are very tough on employees. It's a kind of dependency, as one psychologist told me, and when you're cut off from a dependency, people get hostile and critical, and the boss has to take a lot of fire, people get anxious, their habits are disrupted. I think the downside is really all in the short term here, and in the long term, people develop new and better habits.
Again, we're speaking with Sue Schellenbarger, and we're talking about emails. Imagine banning it, and a lot of, apparently, how many companies are doing that? Do you have a sense of that?
It's really a handful at this point, taking the really high-profile company-wide ban. Certainly, U.S. Cellular has done this. Intel is testing it in a unit. Deloitte & Touche is trying it in one very big unit. A company called PBD Worldwide Fulfillment in Georgia has done it. The pioneer here was a company in California, a software company, and they found an interesting thing that when they tried this, employees' relationships got better. And this is something I learned. You don't think about email having a bad effect on your relationships with people, but in fact, people hide behind email.
Right.
They don't want to deal with somebody face-to-face, so they'll fire off an email, and it may be tersely worded. We're not always aware of the emotions that underlie what we write,
and they're misconstrued.
And
people very often...
That company was talking about how the bad effects there.
Right, even when you're... I've been... I send out an email where I might make a joking comment, kind of because that's, sometimes my personality, that's it. But when my personality doesn't come across when you're just looking at a text, because some people take offense.
And then you're astonished by the response, right?
Right. But again, email was supposed to improve productivity, and it was supposed to be more efficient, a tool of efficiency. Why would now companies think that perhaps it's not doing that?
It kind of got like an avalanche rolling downhill, and it certainly has improved productivity. I think most experts agree that at least a part of the productivity gains we've seen in recent years come from technology, including email. And we really can get a lot more done more quickly. But it begins to get in the way when people begin hiding behind it, and the CEOs and managers I spoke to described an office where there'd be this silent tapping of computer keys, and people would be emailing someone sitting 10 feet away, or they would be emailing coworkers they'd worked with for 15 years and never met them face to face, and it just doesn't pass the normalcy test. It's just not normal for humans to sit and tap on their computers and never see each other. So that's the point at which I think it becomes pathological. And I think this one CEO, Jeremy Burton, who's now with Serena Software, was really a leader in this area. And he told me that the test for him was when he had to spend a lot of time straightening out arguments among his employees about issues that had come up on email. Hmm. He said, people were just really screwing up their relationships with these terse little poorly worded messages, not dealing with the emotions behind them. So, I think that's one of the keys that things have gone astray.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Matthew in Manhattan. Matthew, thanks for calling.
Hi. The email is an integral part of many service-oriented businesses, and I think it's unrealistic to think that you could just tell that person to, or that industry that does service-oriented business, to say, don't use your email. From my perspective, if it were me, I'd have to basically take the day off. Firms can monitor the emails very easily. They can prevent people from doing personal business just by monitoring who they're sending their emails to.
Well, that brings up a whole other set of questions about Big Brother watching you. Matthew, thank you for calling me. But what about that issue about some businesses that simply cannot function without email, Sue? Are there some examples that you've seen?
And Matthew raises a great question. And fortunately, these internal bans were usually executed by people who knew their companies well enough to avoid guys like Matthew. I mean, if you've got a unit that, is sending essential emails to customers or coworkers to get jobs done, they were generally exempted from those, there were some mistakes made initially with these broad bans, but they were quickly corrected, when the manager in charge realized, whoa, we can't shut down, that customer service unit which operates on email. So, Matthew, good point.
What about text messaging? I mean, that's another tool that now people are using more and more. I went to a seminar recently where they said email is kind of old hat.
Well, it is. So many companies are on instant messaging, text messaging, and that was one of the ways that employees circumvented these email bans. It was very interesting to me. People tried to sneak around them in various ways, and that was one of the ways they did it. And it certainly, the younger generation of workers in particular are used to even more instantaneous communication. Employers would stomp that out, too, in some cases, I found in my reporting. The whole point, they would say, is to get you talking to people face-to-face or by phone, which they consider to be better. So, good point.
Sue Schellenberger writes the Work and Family column in the Wall Street Journal. We go now to Anthony in Brooklyn. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
I have a question. Well, I have a comment because I kind of agree that how this whole email and texting has definitely taken away from the whole sort of face-to-face communication. I'm about 41 now, and I was just thinking about, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't remember having email. I didn't remember having text. I remember the old-fashioned way of getting on the phone and communicating with my clients and talking with family. Now it's like you don't even have to talk to anybody. It's just basically I see in church people texting between, you know, during service, you know, trying to catch up with someone, and it just seems that this becomes so important. I think it's a good idea, but I doubt it's going to work because our world is so highly regarded on email and texting that it's almost like you would think that the country will actually have to shut down for the day because we cannot get emails or texting out. But I think it's the new way of the world, but I think it's sad because we're teaching our younger generation this is the way we have to communicate.
This is the way we have to communicate. Good point, Anthony. That question, it goes back to this idea of does email create distance or does it create connectivity? I'm sure many of you listening could probably come back to examples where an email gets misconstrued and things are trying to be resolved through email and nothing happens, but then you get into a meeting and in the meeting when people dialogue and see and hear each other in a much clearer way, things get resolved. Your sense, Sue?
There were email strings described as I reported this story of, you know, 20, 30 messages where you have to scroll all the way down to the bottom to get to the central issue. And, you know, people were pinging it around like a hot potato instead of really resolving the issue. One of the effects of the email bans was that managers involved changed their habits. And after they realized what was happening on email, as soon as something went around one or two times, they would call a meeting. Mm-hmm. And they would say, okay, stop the email. We're going to sit down and talk face-to-face. You know, I think Anthony raises a really interesting point. Think of that image that he mentioned. You know, you've got people at church standing engrossed in their, you know, PDAs or whatever, doing text messaging. Isn't it interesting that we can be in the middle of a social scene, like an office is very social, a church setting, and people are tied to their electronic devices,
right,
you know, when actually we're supposed to be socializing? So it really is new times for our culture, and I think, you know, these corporate efforts are really just experiments.
Right. Again, we're talking to Sue Schellenberger, who was the writer. She writes for the Work and Family column for the Wall Street Journal. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692-433-WNYC. Give us a call if you have any experiences. I mean, I would step it up a little more, because for me, email is less of a problem than cell phones. I would like to see if we can find a way to even say, okay, let's stop the cell phones for a day or two.
Wouldn't that change things?
I mean, I did a big experiment. I risked it a whole month. I spent almost 5 weeks in Europe this summer, and as opposed to doing international roaming, I said, no, I'm going to a couple of conferences, but for the most part, I'm just going to be with my family. And I literally did not take one cell phone call for a whole month, and
wow.
I survived. I didn't.
And here you are today.
Yeah.
I think we haven't realized completely how much these devices are changing our relationships. I think, you know, we have a, you know, generation of helicopter parents cell phoning their kids every day at college. We have coworkers emailing each other, you know, from cubes 5 feet away. I think we're still getting a grip on how does this affect us as social creatures. And it's fascinating to see all the ways.
Yeah, and it's short and long-term effects on individuals and how it creates more stress, because you feel like if you don't have it on or you're not checking your emails, you're not connected and there's something wrong.
Absolutely.
But on the other hand, I find it interesting because obviously, the idea of these technologies as tools for business and efficiency and productivity, it seems like now people are coming to a different realization.
Well, that's right. I mean, we've gotten so enamored of email that and everything looks like an email task, and the pendulum really needs to swing the other way. I notice in myself a tendency to check email more often as my productivity goes down, because I'm tired and it's easy and I don't have to do any really hard work. I'll just check my email and look, I'm still working. Well, that's not what our bosses have in mind when they set our business objectives. So, I think it's a learning curve we're on here. And I predict that, in 5 or 10 years, people are going to be much smarter about how they use email. And I think the next generation of workers will be much more restrained. I know.
Well, 5 or 10 years, they might not be emails. There might be some other way of constantly remaining in contact.
Right. That may be the manual typewriter of the past by then.
Or just thinking out loud. Let's go to Hatna, who's joining us from Queens. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on WNYC.
Well, I think what is definitely important is, previously, you would write a letter stating your requirements. If you did a job in Europe, let's say, and it needed some installation, you would write a very good letter, point it all out, what you needed when you arrived, it was ready, you did your job. Now there are probably 50 emails specifying each nail, asking, what did you mean? Will you be? What will you do? It's so much more work, this email business, than it ever was before.
But I thought, thanks for that call, and I thought you were going to go in another direction, because on a personal level, the letter writing is a thing of the past. I recently wrote a letter to my brother who lives in Chicago, and then he wrote me back with another letter, and I never felt more connected to him simply by receiving that handwritten letter in the mail, as opposed to the maybe dozens of emails that I get from him regularly during the course of a month or so.
Isn't that wonderfully intimate? I have a friend in California who took a 4-month sabbatical and weaned herself off email. She's in a high-tech job. She said writing letters was the greatest joy of her life. We forget how intimate that is.
We're going now to Claudia, joining us from Manhattan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just have a general question. Concern, really. Why do we focus so much on the negative aspects or the negative possibilities socially with this new technology, especially when it's so new? And I'm wondering if, when telephones first came into being, if people were saying it was going to diminish social skills then because it wasn't face-to-face anymore.
Right. Good point, Claudia. Your thoughts on that, Sue?
Great point. I mean, that's a wonderful historical perspective. I think what we're seeing is a swinging of the pendulum. First, we see all the positives, and we all are enthralled by that, and we race into using email. And then as we get very enmeshed in it, we begin to see, maybe it's not 100% positive. Nothing is. And now I think we're seeing the pendulum swing back, and we'll probably be seeing and hearing more negatives about email. In fact, people in cutting-edge high-tech fields that I've spoken to said, email really is passé, which you referred to a moment ago. That's a thing of the past. That's, something that we've moved beyond. So I do think that what we're seeing is a very interesting cultural process of getting used to this. Right. And, we know not to overuse the telephone now, and soon we'll learn not to overuse email, I hope.
Mm-hmm. I think the bigger point is the idea of interpersonal kind of direct, unmediated interpersonal communication as being a tool for business, right? For productivity, for creating community within the workforce. Will this trend, this for no email Fridays, catch on, or do you see this kind of as a quick fad that's not going anywhere?
I think we'll see more of it gradually. I think it may be done department by department. It's pretty tough to do company-wide, as our earlier caller pointed out. I think we'll see more of it, and I think we'll see more informal restraints. I've already seen within companies informal conversations with managers saying, look, don't do this by email. Get up and walk over and talk to them. And I think as that becomes more of an awareness, there won't need to be bans anymore.
All right. Let's go to Anne in Stamford, Connecticut. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. We actually, my literacy staff in my school building, we took a different approach to sort of an email ban on the first hour and a half of our day, because we found that as we answered emails first thing in the morning, we were becoming reactive to problems instead of proactive about some of the global things that we needed to achieve as a staff. So we thought if we can take that first part of the day and get to some of the things on our long to-do list, then we can feel like we're not constantly just reacting to problems or issues that are coming up with some of the teachers that we work with. And we found that to be, instead of just taking a whole day of not answering emails, to take a chunk of the day and use that where we say, okay, we're not going to answer emails right now.
Well,
we found that to be really effective for us.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that with us, and thank you, Sue Schellenbarger, for joining us this morning as well, drawing our attention to email-less Fridays. I kind of like the idea, so we'll see how it works today for me. Sue Schellenbarger writes the Work and Family column in the Wall Street Journal, and you've been listening to The Brian Lehr Show. My name is Mario Murillo, filling in for Brian today. It's been a pleasure, always a pleasure to work with the staff here at WNYC. This program was produced by Jim Colgan, Lisa Allison, Priya George, and Jody Avergan. We had help all this week from Nora Abramson, Amber Cortez, Laura Silver, and Tushar Kantal. Debbie Daughtry is at the audio controls, and Nuala McGovern is the executive producer. Brian Lehr, he'll be back on Monday. I'm Mario Murillo. Have a great weekend.